The title of the message, and this is part one. We had a part one this morning, and we have a part one tonight as well. And the title is A Murder Plot and a Sleepy Sermon. A Murder Plot and a Sleepy Sermon. We see both of those things here in Acts chapter 20. We're not going to get to the sleepy sermon until next week, but we are going to look at the murder plot in Acts chapter 20. Remember now, we're still in the midst of Paul's third missionary journey, and we'll continue to talk about it until the middle of the next chapter. And in the passage we will see tonight, Paul moves on from a long ministry, over a couple years ministry in Ephesus, and he moves on to Macedonia and Greece and Troas. And we notice, first of all, this murder plot. We're going to see this. We're going to see in a couple minutes. Apparently, they had planned on murdering him on board the ship and then maybe dumping him overseas. Quite something, but he got word of it. God protects his own, doesn't he? And we see exactly what happened here with the Apostle Paul. Now, he doesn't always. God sometimes decides to allow someone to die. Not everyone can live, and God does, but until God's will is complete, he will protect his own, and he did with the Apostle Paul. His ministry was not done yet. And so the sleepy sermon is going to be interesting next week because we see a man falling out of a window. We complain sometimes about long sermons. Well, Paul had a really long sermon, and a guy fell asleep and fell to the ground. So we'll see that next week. You know, the story's told, now whether it's true or not, I don't know, of a young Bible college student who consistently and constantly fell asleep in class. And after he was sound asleep, the student next to him tapped him on the arm and told him, he said, "The professor wants you to stand and pray." Well, he didn't. So right in the middle of the professor's lecture, the sleepy young man stood and began to pray in the middle of class. Dishonest. I wouldn't do that, but funny, obviously, that he did such a thing. I've had people fall asleep from time to time as I have preached. Occasionally through the years, I've even had people literally snore in the middle of my messages. Had that a couple of times where you could audibly hear someone snoring in the middle of my message, and that's kind of awkward. I understand, though, that at times because of health conditions or maybe a lack of sleep, that can happen. Maybe sometimes, and I know I'm on a medication that makes me very sleepy sometimes when I sit down. And there's times, and we have special speakers, I fight it. Why? Because I'm on that medication. And so I understand. I'm fully aware of, how that is and can be very difficult at times. And we'll see more about the sleepy young man here next time. But interesting passage here. Notice, first of all, in verses 1 through 4, sorry about my throat tonight. It's allergies again, and it's just really taken a toll on my voice tonight for whatever reason. But in verses 1 through 4, chapter 20, we see Paul ministers in Macedonia and Greece. Paul ministers in Macedonia and Greece. Notice verse number 1 of chapter 20. After the uproar had ceased, Paul sent for the disciples. And when he had exhorted them and taken leave of them, he left to go to Macedonia. When he had gone through those districts and had given them much exhortation, he came to Greece. And there he spent 3 months. And when a plot was formed against him by the Jews, as he was about to set sail for Syria, he decided to return through Macedonia. And he was accompanied by Sopater of Berea. the son of Pyrrhus, and by Aristarchus and Secundus of the Thessalonians, and Gaius of Derbe, and Timothy and Tychicus and Trophimus of Asia. But these had gone on ahead and were waiting for us at Troas. When we sailed from Philippi after the days of unleavened bread and came to them at Troas within 5 days, and there we stayed 7 days. Now, there's all six verses we're going to cover tonight. But let's look, first of all, at verses 1 through 4, where Paul ministers in Macedonia and Greece. Now, we're going to be looking here at the maps here as we go along, and I'll be pointing some things out to you. Now, recall in the last chapter, the idol makers were upset that Paul and the others were so effective with their ministry and that business was being taken away from them. And the city was whipped into a frenzy over this, and then the rioting began. In the end, the town clerk was able to quiet the people and reason with them that this unlawful riot might invite the anger of Rome, and that instead, if there's a problem, it needs to be taken care of through the courts, legally. And the last chapter, chapter 19, ends with the town clerk dismissing the assembly. And then chapter 20 picks up where the last chapter left off. Well, let's look, first of all, and I'm going to keep these maps up. I've actually got three of them here. But here's Ephesus, okay? Ephesus is here. Troas is here. We're going to talk more about it. Over here is Macedonia and then into Greece. So we're talking about this area right here then that the Apostle Paul is going from place to place. So Paul then waited until the people had settled down to meet with the disciples and leave. That only makes sense, doesn't it? They just got done with a riot. And so Paul wanted to make sure before he got the disciples together that people weren't going to, you know, gather and descend upon them and carry them into the forum and begin beating them or whatever, that, you know, there was going to be another riot that was going to begin. And so he waited until things settled down, and then he met with the disciples, and then he left. So understand that it wasn't the riot that forced Paul out of the city. The decision was already made before. Look at 19, verse 21. Chapter 19 and verse 21. Now, after these things were finished, Paul purposed in the Spirit to go to Jerusalem after he had passed through Macedonia and Achaia, saying, after I have been there, I must also see Rome. Now, we saw this passage before. So this is something that Paul had already purposed to do. So it wasn't that, well, he was forced out by the riot. No, he wasn't. He could have stayed. God would have taken care of him, no doubt. But, he had plans. He had plans. He had more ministry plans. So no doubt he told these precious believers what he planned to do. He gathered together with them and then exhorted them to stand firm in the faith and be true to their Lord in spite of the persecution that was going on around them. They needed this encouragement. They saw what happened. They saw the riot. And so it was, it could be real disturbing to them. I'm sure it was. And they needed Paul's encouragement to say, you know what? God will take care of you. You just stand up for him. You live for the Lord. Don't be reticent to share the gospel with others. But you be faithful in your preaching of the gospel. And when we read our text here in verse 1, I want you to notice what it says. And when he had exhorted them, he and taken his leave of them. Really a very cold translation. In fact, normally we don't talk that way. The person was taking his leave. We would say that it's very formal sounding. It's very cold sounding. But that's not what this word means in the Greek. Taken his leave, here the meaning of the Greek is not at all cold and formal. In fact, it implies embracing, taking someone and holding them close, embracing them. It implies warm exchange between people. So these are his converts. These are his disciples. He loves them. So before he leaves, he wants to gather around. He's going to exhort them. He's going to speak with them. And you can see maybe speaking with a few disciples at a time, or you know, this one over here, he's talking to a little more because he needs a little more encouragement. Comes around and continues to talk with them, a warm exchange. And then hugging them. And probably as is common in that part of the world, kiss on each cheek. And of course, depending on where you are in the Middle East, that's the rule of how many kisses you get on which cheeks. In Egypt, it is what? 1, 2, 3, right? You start on the left. 1, 2, 3 in Egypt. In Jordan, it's, isn't it like 3 and then 3? Or is it 2? Something like that. Anyhow, but depending on where you go in the world, there are different ways of saying hello and or goodbye. And, you know, how you kiss on the cheek. It's generally men with men, women with women in that culture. Occasionally you have a lady come up and hug a man, that sort of thing. But it's generally looked down upon within Muslim cultures. But anyhow, and probably it was the same during this time as well. So, again, not a very cold and formal goodbye, you know, where he has to get up in a pulpit and, you know, address them formally. No. He addresses them, I'm sure, but then he talks to them individually. He talks to them as smaller groups, and he hugs people and gives them kisses on the cheek. Greet one another with a holy kiss. And it implies then embracing and warm exchange. And notice it says he left to go to Macedonia. Remember now, Paul spent a lot of time there too. Paul spent more time in Ephesus than any other place. Over 2 years, 2.5 years. So verse 2, when he had gone through those districts and had given them much exhortation. So end of verse 1, he left to go to Macedonia. So he goes north into Macedonia. Let me see here. He's going north, okay? He's going north, and by the way, he's going to go through Troas too. We'll see that. But he goes north, and the idea is he's going to Macedonia. All right? We'll talk more about that in a minute. Thessalonian church was in Macedonia, so churches he had planted. Eventually, he's going to make his way to Achaia, or loosely Greece, and he's going to be ministering in Corinth as well. We'll talk more about that in a couple minutes. Let me give you an idea of where these things are. This is a really cool map. This is a then and now. So you have, you know, the red is what it is now. Those are the country boundaries. There's also a then, and the then is the black. All right, so let's notice. Paul here is going up into, well, this is Macedonia, okay? And Paul is going up into this area. He's heading north. We're going to see he goes into this area a little bit. Probably not very far, and we'll say more about that in just a couple of minutes. But let's see if I can find, okay, there's Corinth. All right, here's Ephesus here. And notice as he travels up here, by the way, Istanbul is right there. If my wife and I do end up flying in December, that's probably the city we will go through is Istanbul in Turkey. And then it's interesting to think the Apostle Paul was in Albania, Macedonia, Kosovo. We hear some of these countries in the news. And notice, you don't think of the Apostle Paul maybe going to those areas. But so it's very interesting that we think about this. I don't think it was terribly far up here from what I can tell scripturally, but it is interesting to consider these things. And I want you to notice here, here's Corinth down here. Paul pressed, he was talking about going through Macedonia. And then scripture says in just a couple of minutes, we're going to see this, he went into Illyricum. And Illyricum, we'll go back just a minute, that's all these countries, Kosovo, Serbia, those areas there. So it's interesting when we think about where Paul ministered and we think about the countries today. We hear about these countries sometimes on the news. Kosovo was real popularly in the news not too long ago, and some years ago, but not terribly long ago. And we don't really think that about where that is in relationship to our biblical maps. So I think a map like this is very, very helpful. So notice, he left from Ephesus to go north and over a little bit, west a little bit into Macedonia. And then notice verse number 2. When he had gone through those districts and had given them much exhortation, he came to Greece. This summarizes Paul's ministry in Macedonia at this time. Notice that the purpose at this time was not evangelization. It was discipleship. Don't think that discipleship is not important. You know, somehow we've gotten the idea that evangelism is so much more important than discipling a believer, than bringing a believer along. That's not true. In fact, the Great Commission, the main verb in the sentence in Matthew chapter 28 is make disciples. So the commandment is this, go and make disciples. That's a commandment. And how do we make disciples? Well, obviously, they have to be saved first, right? So evangelism is part of the Great Commission, but it's not the whole thing. Making disciples is the crux of the Great Commission. We need to remember that. And so there are many churches that emphasize evangelism over discipleship. I've told you this story before, I think. There was a gentleman I knew who's with the Lord now. But he went to a church that was very, very big on children's bus evangelism. And they would go to an area, in fact, it was when I was in Detroit. They'd go downtown Detroit. That was, I'm going to say, 30 miles downtown Detroit, 30, 35 miles. And they would pull in a bus with a bunch of people, and they'd get out and start passing out tracts and witnessing. Then they'd come back at the end of the night, and they'd announce it on Sunday morning and say, there were, for instance, let's say, there were 30 people saved in our evangelism program. Amen! But people are excited. People are getting saved. Well, my friend who went to the church, he went up and asked somebody, he said, it's really good that goes on, but shouldn't they be in church the next Sunday? He had a point, didn't he? See, the problem is they weren't making disciples. You know, when you have a baby, you don't drop off your baby at a gas station and walk away and say, raise my kid for me. Don't do that. Raise your kid yourself. Well, when you have spiritual kids, Paul understood he had spiritual kids need to be raised. They needed to be encouraged. They needed to be turned into disciples. And so this isn't less of a work than evangelism. It's part of the same work. It's part of the same ministry. And so the Apostle Paul was going back over some of the places where he ministered, and he was giving them, notice that the text says in verse 2, had given them much exhortation. They needed it. They needed encouragement. They may have needed a little shove, a little push. And so this verse summarizes Paul's ministry in Macedonia when he had gone through those districts, okay? Meaning what? Those districts in Macedonia, when he'd gone through those areas, when he had gone through the areas in which he'd ministered before, he'd been that same direction. And notice again, it was not evangelism. Now, does that mean Paul didn't witness to people? I'm sure he did. But that was not the thrust of his missionary work at this time. By the way, when we go overseas, the thrust of our ministry overseas is not evangelism. That is for the nationals. But what is our thrust? Discipleship. Making disciples, training people, teaching them doctrinally, being an encouragement to them. I'm teaching an online class right now, just once a week. In fact, this Wednesday is the end of it. It's about eight week course, and it's on expository preaching. So it was kind of fun. It was kind of fun, you know, dealing with them. But you know, that is part of making disciples. It's part of helping them to be able to minister more fully where they are. And so Paul, during this time, probably ministered as far as Illyricum. Look at Romans chapter 15, verse 19. This kind of gives us a hint. Romans chapter 15 and verse 19. Romans 15, verse 19. In the power of signs and wonders and the power of the Spirit, so that from Jerusalem and round about, as far as Illyricum, I have fully preached the gospel of Christ. So Paul'd been there, all right? So when he says Illyricum here, the indication is this probably was the time he went. So he probably went that far. Now, I want you to notice the map here once again. Where is Illyricum? And this is what I was telling you before. Illyricum is up here and even further north here. But it includes Serbia and Montenegro, Kosovo, Macedonia, Albania. This is all involved with that, with Illyricum. So the Apostle Paul evidently, he went through Macedonia here, Macedonia, notice in black. He was in Macedonia and he pushed northward. And I know you don't see Illyricum there, but I want you to notice on this map. Here, this is clearer. This is Macedonia. And if you go further north, Illyricum there. And I want you to notice the lower portion is Dalmatia. I guess that's where we get Dalmatians from, right? So Dalmatia and up here in the north, the south, but this is what we're talking about, this area. So Paul evidently, as far as this, so Paul, and I don't know how far he pressed into this province. I don't think he'd go all the way north. I get that feeling, but at least here, he would have followed some of the major cities that were there, and he pushed from Macedonia and he went north. So presumably, this is maybe where he was at this time, part of it. So understand that this summarizes about a year of ministry here. Just in these couple of verses, there's a lot of travel. So he's summarizing. Obviously, Luke wants to spend time in Ephesus. He wants to show that, and so he does. But there's a year of ministry here in his travels that we have in verses 1 and 2. And we know from 2 Corinthians what other things he did on this trip. Number one, he ministered in the city of Troas. 2 Corinthians chapter 2 and verse 12. Let's go back. All right, remember where Troas is? Troas is here. So on his way from Ephesus up to Macedonia, we know that he also ministered in Troas according to 2 Corinthians. And chapter 2, verse 12. Then, there, I should say, there in Troas, he expected to meet Titus. 2 Corinthians 2 and verse 13. But he didn't catch up with him, and was concerned about that, until he reached Macedonia. Okay? So, didn't catch up with him here, but he did when he went up into Macedonia. That's when he saw Titus. Now, why was he so concerned about Titus? Well, Titus would be bringing word of what was going on in Corinth. Remember, there were some little problems there in Corinth, remember? They had all kinds of problems, didn't they? Carnal church, they had all sorts of issues, not dealing with church discipline situations. All kinds of things, immorality and all sorts of things going on in Corinth. Titus was there to help deal with things, and Paul, as a nervous dad, is thinking, where is Titus? As he gets to Troas, he's not there. And finally in Macedonia, he sees him. And the good news was, when he caught up with Titus, that Titus had some very positive news about that troubled church in Corinth. Paul then wrote 2 Corinthians from Macedonia. Now we're getting our dates of our biblical books, getting the idea of when they were written. We know that from 2 Corinthians chapter 8 and verse 1, 2 Corinthians chapter 9, verses 3 and 4. And Paul, in this trip, no doubt visited some other areas too, and that is Philippi, Thessalonica, and Berea. Notice, Philippi, it's hard at this angle, hard looking at it from the side. All right, so here is Ephesus, going up to Troas, Corinth is here, Berea is here, Thessalonica, I believe Philippi's here somewhere. I think it's off the map there at that juncture. But anyhow, those were some other places that Paul was ministering as well. So why? He was going through the area. All right, those were some of the territories in Macedonia that he was. That he was going to encourage the people there of the churches. And then it says he came to Greece. Now, it's usually known by the name Achaia, and Achaia is the name of the Greek province, okay? But here it's called Greece. Achaia was the Roman province. And this is the green area of Paul's journey map, in essence, this area right here. Notice Achaia. But, loosely it's called Greece, and of course Athens is there too. It's a major city, so loosely it's just called Greece. He went into Greece, went into that area, went into Achaia and ministered there. And notice verse 3. And there he spent 3 months, and when a plot was formed against him by the Jews, as he was about to set sail for Syria, he decided to return through Macedonia. So there it says he spent 3 months. As Arnold Fruchtenbaum writes, Paul spent the winter months of AD 56 and 57 or 57 and 58 in Corinth. During this time, he wrote the epistle to the Romans. Okay? So we saw 2 Corinthians already was written, and then later on, he would write the epistle to the Romans there. So along Paul's journey here, we could see as these different epistles were written as well. So he spent 3 months. according to verse 3 there. And when a plot was formed against him by the Jews. Well, this isn't the first time that there was a plot formed against him by the Jews. The Jews many times plotted against Paul. They gave him a harder time than the Gentiles did, his own people. Because Paul wanted to be back in Jerusalem in time for the Passover, remember we've talked about that, he decided to take the shorter trip by sea, leaving from Corinth for the province of Syria. Okay, so he was going to leave. He's in Corinth, ministering in Corinth. And notice that there is a port there. He was going to leave from here, and he was going to sail across, and he would get to Asia. Notice what the text says here too. Oh, by the way, I'm sorry, the province of Syria over there. Not the province of Asia, but the province of Syria. But after hearing about the plot on his life, well, apparently they were going to murder him on ship, as we said before, and then they were going to dump him overboard. Paul decided to backtrack and travel, at least partially, by land instead. So instead of leaving on the ship where they were going to kill him, instead of leaving from Corinth here, he backtracked. And he went back through Macedonia again to kind of fool his enemies. I want you to notice something important here. And that is that we don't need to court martyrdom, okay? Some people get the idea, well, I'm going to do it anyhow. I don't need to be smart about what I'm doing. I can be foolish. No. And you know, when we go overseas, we're not foolish either. There are some places we don't go. There are some things we don't do because it's dangerous. So you got to use your head. Paul used his head. He heard there was a murder plot. Could God take care of him? Yes, but he didn't have a martyr's wish. God expected him to use his wisdom and his brain. Obviously, God had it revealed to him somehow, whatever it was, through the grapevine. Someone's going to kill you, Paul, on the ship. When you get on board in Corinth and you try to go over the sea there to get to Syria, they're going to kill you and dump you overboard. And we're never going to see you again. He doesn't have a death wish. So Paul decides, I don't have to go on a boat. I can go back through Macedonia again. And so, partially at least, he goes back through Macedonia. Now, Passover would be celebrated. Remember, he wanted to celebrate it where? Jerusalem, remember? Wasn't going to happen. The trip suddenly became longer. And so Passover instead was celebrated in Philippi. Now the best he could hope for was to be in Jerusalem to celebrate Pentecost. And that's in Acts chapter 20, verse 16. So notice, continuing on in verse 4. And he was accompanied by Sopater of Berea, the son of Pyrrhus, and by Aristarchus and Secundus of the Thessalonians, and Gaius of Derbe, and Timothy, and Tychicus, and Trophimus of Asia. Remember that Paul is traveling to Jerusalem. That is his goal. He wants to get to Jerusalem. Why? He wants to deliver the gifts from the churches to needy Jewish saints. We've talked about this before. And I want you to notice, he has representatives here waiting for him, okay, waiting for him to pick them up so they can be part of this whole contingent of individuals. And this list includes the representatives then from the various churches who are carrying funds. Homer Kent writes, the list of Paul's companions is enumerated by their home regions. In all likelihood, Luke has named for us the messengers designated by the various churches to carry the collection to Jerusalem. Sopater, the son of Pyrrhus, was from Berea. And Aristarchus and Secundus were from Thessalonica. Philippi is not mentioned, but may have been represented by Luke. And there's something else that indicates that here in a minute. Gaius was the delegate from Derbe, and Timothy was from Lystra, from the churches of Asia were Tychicus and Trophimus. No representatives are mentioned from Corinth, but their offering may have been sent previously by Titus and two other brethren, 2 Corinthians 8:6 through 24. The group went on ahead and waited for Paul to join them at Troas. So Paul then is now journeying to Troas. He's going to meet the rest of the group there, and they're going to travel and to Jerusalem. By the way, even though Luke is not specifically mentioned by name, I know you kind of look at that and you say, why do we think Luke was part of that group? I thought he was left in Corinth or Philippi. But I want you to notice what the text tells us here. So although Luke is not specifically mentioned by name, we know that the author of Acts was indeed part of the delegation. Notice that earlier, Luke was left at Philippi. We mentioned that, remember? And he was talking about we and us and all of a sudden none of that. Now he's relating something that he was not personally a part of, okay? But I want you to notice as we get into, and by the way, that was Acts chapter 16, verses 10 and 40. We changes to they there. Now we see we and us mentioned once again. Notice chapter 20, beginning with verse 5. But these had gone on ahead and were waiting for us at Troas. We sailed from Philippi after the days of unleavened bread and came to them at Troas within 5 days. And there we stayed 7 days. On the first day of the week when we were gathered together to break bread. Verse 8, there were many lamps in the upper room where we gathered together. So Luke is saying, I'm part of the group once again. So for some of the journey here, Luke was not a part of it. He was writing what he knew historically, but now he's part of the group again. And he's writing actually this from personal experience. So Luke was left at Philippi, joins them again, and we see we and us mentioned again. And so he joins the team once again at Philippi. So we notice then, first of all, verses 1 through 4, Paul ministers in Macedonia and Greece. And then notice going on into verses 5 through 12, we won't get that far, but looking at verses 5 and 6 of chapter 20, but these had gone on ahead and were waiting for us at Troas. And as we mentioned, this was the rendezvous spot for this group. They were going to meet together, this offering group with the delegates, and they were going to take that offering then to Jerusalem, to the saints, the needy saints there. Verse 6, we sailed from Philippi after the days of unleavened bread. All right, so now he had to go a little bit further north to sail. Had to go further north instead of leaving from Corinth now. He's leaving from Philippi this time. So why? Well, he had that plot against him. Once again, doesn't have a death wish. And so he's being careful, he's living by faith, but he's still cautious. He doesn't want to be foolish with his life. There's never a time when we need to be foolish, foolhardy with our lives. And Paul definitely was not that at all. And then in verse 6, we sailed from Philippi after the days of unleavened bread. So they celebrated the Jewish feast of unleavened bread. Now get this, the feast of unleavened bread immediately followed the Passover. So in other words, they celebrated the Passover too in Philippi. Paul intended to do that in Jerusalem, but here the text tells us that he did it in Philippi. So they celebrated the Feast of Unleavened Bread. They celebrated the Passover in Philippi before leaving for Troas. And I want you to notice here that Luke did not meet at the rendezvous city. We said that a minute ago. Instead, he began traveling with Paul at Philippi. In fact, Luke will now be with Paul until the end of the book of Acts. In fact, all the way to Rome. Luke is now going to be with him. So the rest of the book, he speaks from personal experience. And notice at the end of verse 6, and came to them at Troas within 5 days. So the 150-mile trip took 5 days to get there. And it says, and there we stayed 7 days. So after meeting up with the group, they stayed 7 days in Troas. Now, next time we see the ministry of Paul in Troas, and we see his sleepy sermon, which put a man by the name of Eutychus to sleep. So we'll see that beginning next time. So tonight, we obviously saw the death threat, the murder plot of the Apostle Paul, and next time, we see what happens when a man falls asleep in a sermon. Ah, got to be careful of that, don't you? Well, I hope tonight that as we've looked at this, we see the boldness and yet the wisdom of the Apostle Paul in all of this. He was bold. He went forward doing God's will and being bold about it, but he also was not foolish. When there was a death threat, a death plot against him, he made different plans. God led differently. How? Well, God let him know what was going on. God can protect us, absolutely, but we don't need to be foolhardy. You know, some people are this way with their health, too. Doesn't matter the way I eat. Really? I'm diabetic, but I'll go ahead and eat cake all the time. I'll go on a pastry fast, you know? Or I have a gluten problem, I'll go ahead and eat pastries. That'd be doubly bad for Sharon over here, right? That'd be bad for me. Not the gluten, but definitely the sugar. And it's really bad for your sugar diabetes. No question about that. God will take care of it. No, you don't. You need to use wisdom in your life. And that not only goes with your health, but in every area of your life, you need to use wisdom. And Christians, sometimes we do need to rest, don't we? Some Christians sometimes are workaholics, but even Christ said to his disciples, come aside and rest a while. Because there was no time even to eat. They were going to and fro and doing things, and Christ said, come aside to a desert place and rest a while. Sometimes we just need to rest our bodies physically too. That needs to be a part of it. So folks, I guess Paul here in his actions are calling us to wisdom. Trust in him implicitly. Does what Paul did, Paul, when you ran, you were a coward. Is that true? No. Paul, when you ran from that ship, you were showing that you didn't trust in God. Was that true? No. So using wisdom is absolutely consistent with places like the book of Proverbs. So Paul was being wise, and wisdom dictated what Paul did. Godly wisdom along with trusting God. And as we've said throughout this book, trust and obey. That's who Paul was. That's what he did. And hopefully you're the same kind of Christian too.